Well, seeing the appearance in court yesterday, Brian Molefe, Anosh Singh and Siyabonga Gama brought back quite a few memories. We were threatened at the time by a Chinese rail maker for reporting on these shenanigans that were going on at Transnet. It appears, though, that what Mr. Molefe, Singh and co, well, what the two of them were up to was just an apprenticeship for the next step in the bigger state plunder, which happened at Eskom. But Wayne Duvenage has been following all of this for some time. He's right on top of the story and will give us the insights. Wayne is the chief executive of Outer. You know, when these things have been dragging on for so long, there are A, new people coming into the market who had never heard of these fellows and are thinking, oh, shame, you know, poor people. This guy's got he's got diabetes, and this guy has got an aged mother that he needs to look after. Why are they being so nasty to them? And then there are people who have forgotten completely what these chaps were on about and how they have just cost South Africa and taxpayers and human beings in our society so dearly. Wayne, can you take us back to the beginning? What were Molefe, Singh and co up to?
Okay, thanks, Eric, for the time. Yeah, you've got to set your mind back into the state capture mindset and cabal that was unfolding at the time. Jacob Zuma in power, the Guptas really infiltrating his space, his time, and the networks that they were able to set up in various government departments. And essentially what was happening is that you got state-owned entities with a lot of money to spend on infrastructure and services and requirements that they have. And Brian Molefe was the CEO of Transnet. Anosh Singh was the CFO. So a lovely place to make a lot of money. And what happened at that time, back in 2012, a company called Trillion was bought on to, they called it pump priming. It was to set up a situation where they would do some research on behalf of Transnet's management to say, hey guys, if you're going to modernize and meet the demands of rail, freight rail and the requirements of logistics movements in the country, then you're going to need X amount of locomotives. You're going to have to do some infrastructure upgrading and so forth. And lo and behold, this is where it started. And at Trillion, this was an advisory firm that was supposed to be doing this, giving them this advice. And they were paid 93 million rand for that so-called advice to go and start developing or procuring what became eventually over 1,000 locomotives, 1,064. And then what happened, you could see that the money started flowing elsewhere. So a company called Elbertime was bought in with very little to zero work actually done. And I think around about 74 million rand of that 93 was siphoned off to Elbertime. There you have other players involved, Moodley and others who are also linked to Zuma and the Guptas. And so money just started flowing. So that was the start of it. And then Regiments was bought on. They were, or McKinsey, first of all. That's a second case. That case is already, by the way, the second case of 400 million rand.
That's McKinsey, the big international group. Some McKinsey local fake news thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They were also doing work in this regard. And there was an inflated price tag of another 400 million rand put on by bringing in regiments. It wasn't approved properly. And so that case is a separate matter. So I think what you're seeing now, Alec, is these things have taken far too long to get to where they are, but they are there. They were ventilated in the whole Zondo State Capture Commission. But what you're seeing is, I think, the right direction that the investigating directorate are taking and the NPA, and that is to split these matters up into separate cases what they were trying to do right in the beginning was bring them all together into one massive complex case with too many people, and they were just never going to get anywhere. I'd rather have smaller but many other cases. You only need one conviction, 15 years for this person and that person. So now we're starting to see this flowing. So this is the second case, second charge that they've been arrested on. And this is good news for South Africa.
So just to step back a little more before we go into what's going to happen from here. These guys, really, it was pretty crude what they were doing. We reported a lot on it at the time and subsequent to it. They would get contracts at, say, 100 million rand, and then just inflate the contract to 200 million rand, pocket the 100 million rand difference, and the 100 million would be paid to whoever was on the other side of the transaction. But of course, they got greedier and greedier, or the Guptas got greedier and greedier, and they just siphoned more and more and more money off, to the degree that in the one that's now in court, they went from 38 billion to 54 billion. I mean, these are big numbers. You're doing 16 billion rand that they just put on top as cream. And it's almost like they started small, like any thief would, steal 100 rand, then 1,000 rand, then 10,000 rand, and so on. They started small, but escalated up. And then when Transnet wasn't big enough, these same two criminals went off to Eskom to go and do even worse. Now, how can this guy... If you think about it, it's pretty open. It's pretty clear. We've got the commission. We've got the Guptas who fled the country. And yet, Brian Molefe is sitting in Parliament. And from what I see, they are proclaiming their innocence. Heavens above. I mean, you know, it kind of beggars belief, all of this.
It is. This is what movies are made out of. It's absolutely absurd. So, I mean, so the politics of it, yes, you've got Jacob Zuma going off and setting up his MK party and bringing on board all the rogues that he could, you know. And I guess Molefe and others were very instrumental in ensuring that his game plan, his state capture game plan, was well underway when Jacob Zuma was in power. So maybe there has to be some allegiance and some payback time. I don't know, but this is this is a cabal as thick as thieves, as they say, that I just continue to infiltrate wherever they can. So now they're in Parliament, and as you say, standing there as if they are innocent, they've done nothing wrong. Well, the history will show, the facts will show, the case will show and unfold that they were, their fingers and hands and arms are deep in the till of gross maladministration and corrupt activities. And as you say, a contract which was already inflated to 38 billion rand for these locomotives with four different companies. Suddenly, and I recall at the time, they just put that on hold, said, hold on, no, we don't have enough, we need more. And concocted the story that then this contract had now gone up to 54 billion, completely blinded by greed. We saw and followed the money, by the way, offshore through HSBC in Hong Kong, billions of rands that flowed through China North Rail and China South Rail. They were later merged into one company. We gave that information, by the way, to the late Pravin Gordhan. At the time, he was going to China. We've given it to the NPA and the investigating directorate. We followed those money flows down to the last rand, including bank charges, where Salim Essa, who was the person overseas at the time, laundering this money into hundreds of different companies as it came into their account. From China's rail companies. And it's just so obvious what was going on. Our frustration is, how does HSBC and their flagging system not pick this up? So they allowed this to happen as well. And they've got to answer some questions. But coming back to the situation here, Alec, it is a cesspool, and it is so blatantly obvious as to what's happening. And you've got to ask yourself, as you're saying, you know, how much is enough? But they just kept increasing the amounts and doing deals wherever they can. And millions flowed this way and that way through these fictitious invoices and work that was never done. And I think the NPA have got their facts. I think they've got all the information. And Brian Molefe and co are going to find it very difficult to stay out of orange overalls on this one.
But if you consider South Africans are looking at this, as I mentioned in the introduction, many have forgotten, others didn't know it ever happened, and they take these criminals at face value, and they'll say, oh, I'm innocent, you know, I'm a member of parliament, I'm a respectable person. And I even collected hundreds of thousands of votes, this grouping of people. Is the problem not with us, those of us who should be sharing the information more broadly with the public so that there is no doubt amongst members of the public? You know, I still see these articles say, allege this and allege that. There's no allegation, not alleged in that. You do that when somebody's got like a half a chance of being right. There is so much evidence that points against these guys. But that's the point, I suppose, Wayne. How does one get the message across to all of South Africa so that they know that this is just ridiculous, that people are even alleging that they have some kind of other side to the story when we know the money is gone?
Yeah, I guess this is the role of a free press, of a freedom of speech, which we are very fortunate to have in South Africa, and publishing houses and organizations like yourselves and many others that get the message out to the public. And the more free and more open that can flow, the better it is. And I do believe that it gets to a lot of people. I mean, I think of the work that you guys do and ourselves and other media houses. If we were operating in a country like Zimbabwe or Turkey, we would have been closed down, shut down, assassinated. So we do get, the message gets out there, I believe, quite widely. And every time it becomes news, like now they're in court, more and more people are reminded again and do get this full story again. So it's very important that we keep telling the story, that we keep reminding everybody what this is about. But you will have the people on the other side claiming their innocence. I've done nothing wrong. I'm in politics. I don't have funds. Be kind to me on the bail requirements because I need to pay certain fees. And that, well, our view is, you know, get lost. Where are the billions that you stole? Go and get the money. And I guess, you know, it's going to be very difficult to get as much as we can back as a country that's been laundered. It's offshore. It's gone. The Guptas have got their cut. Rudy and I often, and our team often, you know, laugh at the fact that I don't even think the Guptas know how much Salim Essa might have taken from them because he was their money laundering king. And he needs to come back and answer some questions in South Africa. But long story short is they are going to proclaim their innocence. And that's why we have rule of law in the courts. The only frustration we have, Alec, is that our criminal justice system is under massive pressure. It is almost broken to some extent in some areas. For instance, where is the justice when you and I, ordinary men in the street, want to go and lay a charge of whatever it is, and you get told, well, your case will be heard in 2 to 3 years' time? It's just absurd. And so we've got to fix, the government has got to fix the criminal justice system, take down the silos, digitize it, get information to flow, train investigators. There's so much missing in our criminal justice system that the old adage of justice delayed is justice denied, and we have too much justice denied as a result of the overload. And I put the blame squarely at Cyril Ramaphosa's feet. If he was a president that was serious about fighting corruption and dealing with criminal networks in this country, well, they would make sure that a lot of our money flows to the criminal justice system, and SARS included, SIU, Hawks, working together. And that way, that investment could be, you get tenfold back in the extra taxes that you could collect and start to lock up the criminals. But I guess they don't want to do that because a lot of the people implicated in crime and corruption are connected to people in politics. And so it's not good for the business of politics to have this done. And that's why this is a laborious, hard task for civil society and everybody who's trying to fix this issue. It's a massive challenge.
Can you win it? Can we as a nation get through this?
I think so, Alec, and I always see it from the point of view is who's in power today is not necessarily in power tomorrow. And I have to keep reciting the many cases we were bringing against a number of people back in the days when Jacob Zuma was in power and people were saying, but you're really wasting your time. Nothing's going to happen. Well, some of those cases, against the Donnell chap recently, the chairperson at the time, I forget his name now, but recently arrested. You've got Mosi Benzizwane, all those cases from our matters then arrested. And what happens is when you lay the charges now, when you bring these cases to the fore now, they're fresh, the whistleblower information's fresh. It's hard to bring these cases when leadership changes and say, okay, now let's go lay charges because whistleblowers are gone, the information's gone. So the records will always be there. And who's going to be in power in 2029? And what is the appetite, or who's going to be in charge of the NPA then, and the Hawks and IDAC? And it's these leaders that come in that create the shift change from time to time and that gets things to where they are now. If Sean Abrams was still in the NPA, well, none of these cases would have been right now being ventilated and unfolding in court. So I think we can win it, but we get there quicker when you have a mindset from the top that says we're going to tackle corruption, we're going to do it seriously. And it would go a lot quicker if President Ramaphosa had that attitude. Sadly, he doesn't. And that's because his party is a network of corrupt people that are just infiltrated. We see it in the CETAs. We see it in the higher education space. Bladen Zamande very involved. And I say this and say it openly and publicly because we have challenged him on the number of people he's put into positions of power, which he ignored and eventually had to fire people like Andile Nongogo and so on. So it's rife, and there are so many others. And I think he's in the corner. He can't do what I think he knows he should do because he can be removed from his position of power by his own lieutenants.
So I guess from where the South African body politic sits at the moment, it would be pretty positive if you could get the ANC out of power. But to do that, you'd need to get Zuma and co as part of the new ruling government. And they're not going to be wanting to blow the whistle on themselves. So we are stuck where we are at the moment until presumably 2029.
Yeah, we're stuck in a very interesting fluid dynamic that's unfolding in politics in South Africa. So you've got the next year, the local elections coming up. A lot of big metros will change hands, I believe. And again, you see this corrupt network flowing right from national to province through to local government. 2029 is a big one from a national point of view. I guess you see the EFF losing a lot of votes to MK and the ANC to MK. MK growing, what will they be at 15, 20, 25% party? So you're going to have to get the other 75%. I guess this is all about getting the electorate to realize that they've got to vote for change, and yet not all the optics are right for who do you vote for? And you get this attitude of, well, nothing really suits me, so I'm not going to vote. Less and less people vote. Well, that pushes power into the hands of the people who can convince their constituencies to vote for them. And that's where we really need to get people to participate in our democracy and understand that sometimes you've got to vote for the least bad party. In other words, not every party lines up with what you want, but by abstaining, it's the worst thing you can do. And certainly those who don't vote have no room to moan and complain. You've got to get out there and be an active citizen. And the smallest you can do as an active citizen is to vote and don't have any excuses. So 2029 is going to be an interesting year, but so will next year, at the end of next year, 2026 local elections.
So what happens next for Molefe, Singh, Gama and Giani? He's a new name for me, Thamsanqa Giani. What happens next for them? I see that their case has now been postponed until October.
Yeah. So hopefully, if the rule of law flows without all the filibustering and Stalingrad tactics that take place, You have the two sides' legal teams lined up with all their arguments and counter-arguments. So what flows now is all the paperwork and the responding affidavits and founding affidavits, and then they get heard in court. And if the court case goes ahead without any delays again, because whatever, there's so many excuses sometimes, then we'll watch how this argument plays out, and hopefully, again, you know, sometimes the trust is eroded by the cases that are botched, and sometimes, Alec, they are botched because there are alternative agendas by prosecutors, as Shamila Batoy recently stated. The NPA has been infiltrated, and we believe that because if you just look at the Omotoso case in the Eastern Cape and some of the matters up here, there are questions around how the prosecutors have processed these cases. But that's for leadership in the NPA to sort out. But if all things flow, these individuals, if found guilty, will have no other option but to be imprisoned. And that's what we need to see to build trust in government in South Africa. We have the lowest trust deficit, the highest deficit, by the way, in government in the world when it comes to looking at the Edelman Trust Barometer. And government's got to fix that. And we've got to push harder and continue to push harder to make government realize they've got to start serving the people. And this is one way, is to hold people to account. Criminals must go to jail. The less that happens, that trust deficit continues to grow. So hopefully we're going to see some good outcomes. I sincerely believe on this matter they will. The evidence is so clear.
Wayne, just to close off with, many people are looking at South Africa as going one way really bad or another way really good. Could you, if you agree with that as a prospect, could you tell us what is going to trigger one direction or the other?
Well, you know, what will trigger the really good is that we start to see a trajectory that moves in the right direction. So we've got the G20 coming now. We've seen a number of arrests, by the way, not just these, but we recently saw the Dumisani from the Criminal Crime Intelligence Center last week. Arrests there, the Alex Corps mine government state-owned entity arrests recently as well. So we're starting to see things happening. And I always come back to the criminal justice system, because when you start feeling safe, when you start to know that the rule of law works, is when you start investing and when you start getting confidence in a country. And these are the important things. And then when you start to accept international assistance in this regard, and we do see, you know, there are companies, countries from Europe that are here assisting training, getting forensics expertise in systems now. These are the good things. And they become the catalysts to greater change. And then it starts happening quicker. And if we can get that ball rolling, I'm quite excited and positive. Of course, we've got to deal with education. We've got to deal with health. And this is where the politics of change comes in. And I do believe, looking at the dynamics that are flowing, and if the DA and other parties that we need, that they've shown. I mean, I'm not punting the DA here at all. But you just have to do correlation between cities and provinces that work, that have good governance, that have clear audits, clean audits from the Auditor General, and those that don't. And it's a political divide. It's as simple as that. One entity does it better, not saying they're perfect, and others really mess it up. And if we can start to fix the optics of some of the political parties, that opens the door to more votes that will come their way, because it just feels and looks better, and it aligns with cultural alliance in this country. We are diverse. You've got to start appealing to a broader market than just a single one. Then we can get there, Alec. And I'm excited about what might transpire in that regard. But it actually, everything lies in the hands of the politicians. That's where power lies. Civil society is on the outside, business, media. We're all fighting for a better country, growth in the economy, jobs, less poverty, equality issues sorted out, all of that. But everything lies in the power of the hands of the people who run this country. Those are the politicians. And yet they can't see what are such basic needs to change to fix this country, to get growth, to get investment, to deal with the challenges that we have. And the mind boggles. It's why is it so obvious to so many people and not obvious to the few that have the power to change this country? It's frustrating, I must say. But we don't lose hope. This is an amazing country. We've got great diversity, great flora, fauna, resources. You know, compare ourselves to Australia. They've got a rock and a kangaroo and a barrier reef, and yet they get more visitors than us. It's crazy. We've got so much going for us. And they're on the arse end of the world. You've got to take a few days to fly there. We overnight stop from Europe. This is madness. We must unlock our prosperity, and our politicians must wake up.
Wayne Duvenage is the chief executive of ARTA and reminds us that there is nothing more powerful than the truth. It's just a matter of time, but it eventually does emerge. And I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.